And we are back for another mad awesome show here to talk all things SWGH as well as Star Wars. And it's a huge week. So we had Star Wars Celebration. Mando is over. We will get to those later. Again, no spoilers for this early on in the thing. And also we got a new road ahead. So you ready for this, Taylor?
Yeah, man. It's going to be a packed show for sure.
Yeah, and like lots of like really, in my opinion, good things. But I guess just starting us off with the road ahead itself, we got a ton of more details about the crate raid. So what are your feelings towards it right now? I think I know we kind of talked. We got to stop talking pre-show. what are your feelings on it right now, Tilo?
Man, like I'm a little bit of a mixed bag right now, just because I'm excited for it to be new content, new rewards, but that's the big thing for me right now, rewards. I don't know what we're going to get, so I don't know the level of investment I should put into this. And, like, cover your ears, Calvin, because you're a part of the guild now. So, but if it's not super significant on the personal level, I'm going to do the bare minimum when it comes to the guild level, because the rewards, we don't know what it is. So I don't know if I need to invest into Jawas, if I need to invest into Tusken. So I don't know. I'm a little convicted right now, or convicted or messed up about it.
So that's fine. Like, you know, I'll as your guildmate, I'll make fun of you for the next year for not having Tuskens, and that's fine. But just from a curiosity standpoint, like what's your cost or effective cost here? Like, If you don't choose to go after, I guess we'll just say Tuskens, because it's really, I mean, we can dig into the deeper teams a little, but I think that's going to be the main team that most people are going to have to pull the trigger on. Like Jabba is going to be the best thing ever for the raid, but you don't need the raid as a motivation to do Jabba. Jabba already has a good three or four other motivations to do him. But getting to my question, what are you working on instead of Tuskens? Like what else is out there that's that much more tempting?
See, I put ahead of Tuskens, obviously, Aphra. Aphra's ahead of Tuskens. And I also put Zori. I think Zori is a more viable team in GAC than Tuskens. Tuskens are great, but it's a niche team to me. Like, they're pretty solid. I like them. Like, no shame on them whatsoever. But the thing is, when it comes to raids, though, too, I don't know what relic level is going to be needed for it to be consistent or viable. So what if it comes out in the raid, I have R3 Tuskens, but you need R7 Tuskens and the whole team. It's like, do I really want to invest in that? It's going to really come down to what they're able to do, what score they're going to be able to put for me, and what the rewards are. And we just don't have the full picture yet.
Yeah, we don't. We're kind of close, though, because for the modifiers, and we don't know what the modifiers are, but they go all the way up to Relic 8. So there are, I wouldn't be too shocked if some of the things that we need to be able to beat are going to require that much of an investment. Whether they're going to require it on all teams, I don't know, but it's interesting nonetheless.
Yeah. No, and I'm completely open to it. Like, say, Tuskens are like the go-to team for this. I'm going to have to do it if the rewards are there. If that's the team that's make it or break it for the guild, if it's make it or break it for my personal rewards, like I'm definitely going to commit to it. It's just I want to know exactly what I'm going into before plunging in and making that investment, just because everything resource wise for me right now is like really, really tight.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're not really letting up, and there's always something new to kind of go after. I mean, I'm out Aphra right now. We've probably got Reva coming up here in a month or two, and then I still haven't like taken the full purge or plunge on Trench, and now we also get this new Sith fleet release, which that's still a little bit out, so I guess there's that, but there's always something that our resources are pulling us towards. But going back to the raid, what would be like the big motivation that would push you to do Tuskens, assuming they're good? Like, what reward wise, what do you want to actually see?
Firstly, for me, a character is always going to get me really hyped, especially for a raid. Like, you go back to all the way when we had Treya was super intriguing for everybody. Like, it changed the guild.
She was the last raid character.
Yeah, but even before that too, like Han Solo, like Rey characters are notorious for being really nice and really powerful. So I would imagine like they have such a big gap that this next one coming out is going to be a transcendent character to our roster. So I think that would be a really big motivation and kind of like open my eyes and be like, okay, now it's time for me to put this investment in because this is going to be the meta.
Yeah, that's understandable. If, and I know what we already kind of talked about this a second before him, but if R10 is also a reward, and maybe not even the beginning, but maybe after a while, does that entice you at all? Or are you just look at, I kind of have a certain attitude towards it, or you just look at that and be like, you know, I don't care.
I don't know how much R9 materials I have. Like, I just don't use them. So I just use them basically for requirements and maybe like a super character that really needs like R9, like a JML. But it's one of those things that I don't fully invest in because I don't have the resources. So if it's R10, it's going to be in the same situation. I'm going to be like, okay, I'm probably going to need some for requirements and maybe a character or two, but it's not a super big deal for me.
Yeah, I'm in the same exact boat where it's not – I need more, a lot more Relic 5s than I need Relic 8s or Relic 9s. And the way that CG currently has it programmed is – they all share signal data. So I could go after more Relic 9s or, you know, Relic 10 if and when it comes out. But I'm trying to make a bigger push, and we'll get to this later when we talk about Conquest, but I'm trying to make a lot bigger push on Datacrons this season. And more R8s, R9s, than, again, eventually R10s. That doesn't get me more Datacrons. I need more R5s and or R7s very rarely, but... So it has R10 in it, that probably actually won't sway my judgment at all as far as what I want to invest in.
Yeah. And then another thing with the whole investing into teams right now, I just think it's premature because if you look at back at like CPIT, for instance, like there was teams when they were first coming out with the raid that were like the meta team that you needed for this raid. And now we look at it and we're like, we don't even use those teams. This one may be a little bit different because they're limited the amount of teams and amount of characters you can bring to it. But I imagine the way this community is, we're going to find like a cheese with Jabba. We're going to find a cheese with something. And then it makes your other investments irrelevant. So I don't know. I'm like a little cautious, and I'm like, I have that wait and see attitude right now.
Yeah, that's probably for the better. And we're a little bit more limited, and I still like, I'm very pro this. I'm not against this, but we're a little bit more limited on this one just purely because we have a split number of factions. Like even as recent as the CPIT one, there were quite a few feats, or not feats, but there were quite a few teams that were still drawing from like multiple things. Like I think SLKR's best team, what was it? It was Daka, Zombie, Watt, and Thrawn, or something to that effect.
I believe so. And a lot of people ended up relicking their zombie, and it's like, dang, I bet you they wish they still had their G12 zombie.
It's an up and down with Datacrons right now because there's sometimes where it's beneficial and sometimes where it's really not.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just a little cautious when it comes to raids.
Yeah, but I'm excited it's happening. I'm happy we're kind of getting that fill for the content. One other thing that is happening in the new road ahead is we're getting a lot of new quality of life things specifically to do with territory battles and like the super, super long awaited fleet loadouts. Do you have any opinions on those?
Fleet loadouts are cool. I'll probably end up using them myself. It's one of those things where it took them a while to do it, but I'm just glad it's in the game. I know a lot of people wanted it. It doesn't really affect me too much, but I know for a lot of people, it's one of their top wish lists they wanted.
Yeah, it'll be really nice for Territory Wars. Like, I mean, it's not a whole lot of time that it's going to save us, but it'll be a few, I guess, a minute or two every time. And then from a content creation perspective as well, that's actually pretty nice. Like, I use the squad filler for ground constantly in videos just because it's so convenient because you have all the characters right there. You can click on them. You can showcase the ability that you're trying to pinpoint. So I think from that point of view, it'll be a lot easier to do it, or at least a lot or more entertaining for the viewer, really, because you as the creator, you kind of know what you're talking about and what you're getting into. But it's, I think it's easier for the people to follow along too.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it's just a nice quality of life thing to the game. I'd rather have it in the game than not have it in the game at all. Like, at least it gives it the user the opportunity to use it or not have it.
Yeah, and there's no downside to it. It's not like there aren't winners and losers to fleet loadouts.
No, and the TB one's really good. Like, especially for officers, that's going to come in super, super clutch.
Yeah, it is. And the last thing for the road ahead, Tilo, I guess we're kind of breezed right through this one, is the Fury, not only the Fury class interceptor, which is Malgus's ship for anyone who's a little behind on it, but we also have the full confirmation that we're getting that ship along with the Leviathan, which that's pretty fun. I mean, I would have been okay with the Ravager, but from a ground perspective, I think the Leviathan is way better, because it's much more likely that we're going to have to be relicking stupid high Malgus, Malik, and Darth Revan than the Sith trio. Like, if they went the Ravager direction, we probably would have had to have the Sith trio at super high relics. And, I mean, they would be okay at high relics, but I would much rather, way rather have Malik and Malgus at R9 than I would Scion and Nihilus, like in a million years. That's a much better ground investment.
Before we get into it, Meathead's in the chat too. So Meathead asks, what other quality of life thing would you like to see in the game?
Shoot. All right, Meathead. What other quality of life? So the biggest one that I think is on most people's minds, and I, with me kind of digging into Conquest more, is if in some facet there could be a sim button for specifically for the treasure nodes post Red Crate, because by the time you've already gotten Red Crate, you've already put in a huge amount of work and man hours to be able to kind of get everything done. And you're trying to just get the Datacrons on top of that. And it can be, you tend to have a little bit of burnout. Like, I've talked to a lot of other players that'll do like the 50 and the 100 crystal refreshes, about like they're like them falling asleep and their phone hitting them in the face, because it's just a lot of time to go through it. So I think that would be a really big one. Like, I understand that for the metrics and whatnot, we need to be spending a certain amount of time on the game. That looks great. But it would be really cool that one, like post Red Crate, we would actually be able to bypass that and get that done.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. And shout out to Brill. Brill is, I think, the first person that suggested that. Yeah, that would be a big, big time saver. And honestly, it would help me spend more crystals in the game too.
Yeah, I would be much more inclined to go into the 100 crystal refreshes, knowing that it's not going to cost me a lot more of my time, and I can still get the value out of it that I need it from a PvP perspective.
Yeah, because I don't know how many times I fall asleep at night, and I'm like, I wake up the next morning, my phone's burning on my chest, I look like Iron Man, and I'm like, man, I missed out on like a couple refreshes that I could have did. And if I could have just spent them like that, it would have been super, super nice. Jabroni's bringing out a good point on the YouTube side too. He's saying Datacron UI. That's another big one too. I think that would be really nice, and a feature to have, kind of break things down a little bit, almost like what we had with our mod selection. That would be cool too.
Yeah, I would. So I have my Datacrons open right now. I think three things specifically with the UI would be really cool. Number one, let us have an arrow to toggle from one Datacron to the next instead of constantly having to click out and click back in. Like that would be a major improvement. Being able to name them, so that, you know, once you get your perfect trench cron, you just name it trench and you go to get another one, and that one also rolls trench but has stats that are actually really good for SLKR. You can just name it SLKR. And then being able to sort them in the Datacron page, like through your inventory, being able to sort them right there by stats. Because right now we have to do this really annoying thing that if we want to find like our best stat output of a Datacron, we actually have to like try to log into a battle and then sort from that interface. So those three would be really huge. Like, give us a toggle, let us name them individually, and On top of that, let us be able to sort them by specific either stat or faction or whatever within the actual Datacron inventory phase where we're leveling them up or reviewing them and whatnot.
You know what? That's a really good point. I like that one a lot. And just anything that makes life easier, pretty much, especially when it comes to Datacron, just because we acquire so much Datacrons, we use them constantly. Whatever can make it a little bit more seamless is 100% welcome.
And if we're just wanting to tack them on there, I know this has been longer requested. It's probably a programming thing that's a little bit difficult, but some type of feat counter for the GCs and or Conquest, or at least for the GCs at a minimum. Because sometimes, like, I realize we want to get to 250 stacks of momentum, but sometimes I just have no idea where I'm at. And I'm like, all right, do I really need to drag this battle out for the full 15 minutes, or can I just get the kill now and end it? Those are my off the top of my head. Those would be great.
Yeah, but for sure, I think the sim button. The sim button would, oh my gosh, save my life so many times.
Yeah, that would revolutionize a lot of things especially for the competitive players.
Yeah, no, 100%. And B had said that he's using his trusty Microsoft Notepad. So good.
Yeah, I use is it Google Notes or something like that? Like, that's my go-to, but Microsoft's probably, they've been in the game for a while too.
I use my iPhone Notes.
We're literally all using the same program with a different name, I guess. I know. But yeah. So, Mihad, thank you for asking. That's pretty cool of you. Also, so kind of getting back to the road ahead, we have the Fury class interceptor with the Leviathan, which again, I'm excited for it. Are you okay with it over the Ravager, Tilo? Because I know that's kind of what a lot of people wanted. And like, the Ravager is a pretty cool ship from a lore standpoint. It's a zombie capital ship, essentially.
It's really cool, but honestly, it doesn't go with Malgus, you know? Like, Malgus,
no,
with
not at all.
It, lore-wise, makes 100 times more sense with it. There's going to be tons of cool things with the Leviathan, too. I'm really interested if they're going to use the Starforge at all with its kit. I think that would be kind of interesting, too. I don't know if they would do it at the same time. Lore, it's a little weird. But there's a lot of cool stuff. They're both Sith Empire. Malgus did, and I'm trying to think back. I believe Malgus looked up to Revan, or if it's,
yeah,
it's the other way around, but I'm pretty sure he did. So it's kind of cool that they would be on the same team. And then they have Sith Empire with other ships. It's almost a built-in team. We already had previous ships already, so it makes tons of sense.
Oh yeah, and they what I am a little more so intrigued by, it's neither good nor bad, but they're focusing. Oh, actually, you know, I bet I do know why. They seem to be focusing heavily in on the concept of Sith Empire for ships instead of just Sith. And at first, I was like, this doesn't really make any sense. Like, we're not splitting our Sith ships with our Sith Empire ships. Like, we don't have nearly enough to even think about doing it. And then it dawned on me, and I think it's even actually said in not the kit reveal, but like the developer insights, they're really trying to keep Vader and Palpatine, who are also Sith, they're trying to keep them specifically on the they're trying to keep them on the whatchamacallit fleet, on the Empire fleet. So that makes sense. And I mean, we'll see what we do as a player base. But it became very apparent with the Defender and with Scythe that they were trying to fill out two Empire fleets, and it looks like we're getting, not only are we getting the Capital and Fury, but it looks like we're getting two other starfighters too. So they're not wanting Empire and Sith to bleed over into each other anymore.
And it still gives them room for creativity too. Like, obviously they know that the Ravager is something that the community wants. It's gone around a lot. So I think if in the future, they can definitely touch that as well too. And they can come up with those ships as well. But this one already had some built-in ships, so it makes it easier.
Yeah, and I think this might be a fun way for them, and we'll see when it comes out, because there's examples of this on both sides. But the Leviathan, if you ever you played KOTOR 1, right? Like the first KOTOR. Two of the main ships that are consistently in it all over the place is the Leviathan, because, you know, that's what's chasing the Ebon Hawk around. But it's also specifically the Sith fighter ship that we have in game. So I wouldn't be that surprised if the Leviathan has not just, you know, Sith Empire allies get this, but if it has specific callouts, similar to how the Malevolence has specific callouts to Vulture droids. Like, those two ships, both in lore and in game, are, like, really linked. And the Sith fighter ship needs help. Like, it's both from a kit standpoint as well, or, like, a ability standpoint and a stat standpoint. The thing sucks. Like, I realize that we haven't had, like, a good fleet for it, and that's part of the problem. But I can definitely see this being a Slave One situation, where I don't know if you remember, but when we got Slave One, they like came out and, or sorry, not we got Slave One. When we got Executor, they had to like come forward and be like, "Hey guys, so we wanted this to be a bounty hunter fleet, but Slave One was so bad in it, you would want to use ships that weren't bounty hunters over him, and that went against their design." So they gave Slave One that entirely new, unique, that actually like it makes him ideal to use with Executor. So I wouldn't. I'm curious and I'm hopeful to see some type of touch up for the Sith fighter, either in Leviathan's kit or just a straight buff.
Yeah. No, that 100% makes sense. I it was funny. I was listening to the Gambit podcast and Solo called it a glass cannon, and then he's all without the cannons, and then Zerf's all
and without the GL.
Why don't you just call it glass? Because that's what it is. Happy dying. And shout out to Zerf. Zerf's in chat. He brought out a good point too. A shuttle would be really, really cool. I not 100%, but I remember seeing the Sith Empire shuttles. I think they're more bulky in design than the Empire shuttles, and they look like a little bit more tight and cool.
Yeah, it's kind of cool how that's taken form in the game. Like, bombers have essentially sat into this position where they're tanks. Like, is that consistent completely across the board? Like, we have the Sith Bomber, which is a tank. We have
Hyena.
Both the Y-Wings, which are tanks. We have the TIE Bomber. I guess Houndstooth isn't a bomber, but all bombers are tanks. Not all tanks are bombers.
Yeah, even the Hyena, too. The Hyena Bomber is a tank, too.
Oh, that's true. Yep. And so is the Resistance. So basically what I'm getting at, it would be interesting if CG kind of continued with that theme, and for every bomber's a tank. Well, what if every shuttle's a support? Because we already have that going with both Empire as well as First Order, and, you know, chat's going on right now about how not only could we get a Sith Empire shuttle, but we could also get the Bad Batch shuttle, which, I mean, that's like a really long ways away, but if they ever want to touch Mace's Second Fleet, which I'm like, after the amount of work that they put into Empire, I don't think it's entirely out of the question, you know, not anytime soon, because, you know, they're doing this thing right now. But, it'd be cool to get the Bad Batch shuttle, too.
Yeah, because there was that rumor way back in the day that they had Yoda's starship, too. So if they bring that out, Bad Batch and a couple other things, possibly, maybe we see something there. But with the Sith Empire fleet, I think there's lots of possibilities. And I'm not 100% sure, because it's been a while. The Starforge... It creates other ships, correct? I wonder if it could.
Yeah, well, like, it creates like everything. I think it can create ships. It can create droids. It can, like, that was kind of its thing. It wasn't the Death Star and the fact that it destroyed, but it, you know, in the name, it forged things.
And who knows if it's going to be tied to it? But it'd be really cool if like the Leviathan had the Starforge, like Pia has the Death Star. And it would be really cool if it maybe had a similar thing to, say, the Separatists, where you spawn those Vulture droids. The Starforge is able to send reinforcements onto the field. I don't know. There's tons of crazy stuff that they could do with this, Sarah.
Oh, yeah, there is. And this is where my curiosity is probably going to get the better of me. But, like, what are they going to – and you kind of mentioned it there. But what are they going to do with its ult? Because right now – The top of the meta is Profundity Executor, and both of them have capital ship destroyers. Like, you don't, I don't know how much higher you can go above that. And I don't know. I think it might be possible that we get a something similar to the finalizer, where it's not a you get it and it's a win button, but it's something that you can get towards the beginning that can massively drag you ahead of the enemy capital ship. What do you think? Because I mean, it could be Starforge, and it immediately like produces something, and then you get like a bunch of stuff before they do. I don't know.
I could see that, or if they wanted to, I could see cooldown reduction on the capital ships being useful too. So say they're going against the PX ship. They could really...
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, they could just stall
right out. Yeah, you don't necessarily need a better... ultimate if the opponent never gets theirs.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that would... Me and Aldous Sandfly, we tried to come up with a resistance A-wing kit where that was pretty much it, where it would get a bunch of evasion and foresight like all the resistance do. And every single time that it dodged, it would increase the enemy's cooldown capital ships by one or something like that, at least for their ultimate.
Oh, that would be disgusting with Empire or something like that. They would have to really, really like limit the dodge because they can just go super crazy.
The ult is Malgus giving the ship back into its rightful owner, the glory of the Republic. Well, there you go, folks. Heard it right from CG.
I'm echoing, so.
Ultimate destroys capital ships in your roster. That would be funny. All right, so I think we'll continue to talk about specifically the Sith fleet as time goes on, because that's going to be some... I mean, we're probably going to talk about every single time we get one of these. I'm assuming they're going to be galactic chases, so this will kind of be an ongoing conversation. But, all right, Tilo, it's time for leg day. What have you been working on in your roster? And, you know, we can include Datacrons into this, so we don't necessarily have to do a whole lot. Is this the part of the podcast where everyone makes fun of Tilo for not having Inquisitors?
You know what? I am so close to getting my Inquisitors. I am 40 shards away from Fifth Brother. I put them on the back burner for a little bit just because I knew GI wasn't coming anytime soon. So I was working on Sana to get ready for Aphra. But as soon as he went double drop, I've been going super hard, and I've been getting like just dumb amount of numbers of Fifth Brother shards. So I'll probably finish him within the next 2 days. So I'll finally be done with Inquisitors, and I'll no longer have that shave against me like Calvin did a couple days ago on me in the guild chat.
That hazing went like way farther than I ever thought it would. Like I thought it would kind of be like a small thing that would happen specifically like on my Discord or Twitch or something like that. And then like it spread like wildfire. Like we got on the Gambit. So that was pretty fun. And then I was even listening to, the Holotable News Network. I don't know if you listened to their most recent one, no. But you got Hayes there too.
I'm going to listen to it tomorrow for sure.
I guess I don't want to spoil things for you, but yeah, be ready for that one.
Oh, man. And shout out to Cubs. Cubs got my back. He's all, it was your plan. It's working out for you. But it's funny, though.
I mean, yeah, we don't need to belabor. All right, so your Inquisitors are going well. How's the Datacron farming going? Are you hitting it hard, or are you just starting real slow?
Oh my gosh, I love that they put the Datacrons before Conquest started. That was an awesome, awesome thing that CG did. Just because I would have hit the cap of the amount of I'm totally blanking on their name. I want to say credits, but the data cash. Yeah, there you go. I would have totally hit the cap. Cash. So I totally started working on my Datacrons before Conquest started. I had a level 9 before we even jumped in, and it's been going pretty smooth. I think I'm at 2 level 9s right now. I'm really trying to get my Datacrons ready. Never like, you know, hey. Wait. Hey. I thought I turned off alerts. My bad, guys. Next one, I'll turn it off. But shout out to B-Head for the follow. He said he's heading out. He has a meeting. But good stuff. No, I am really just working on the Datacrons. I'm trying to get as much to level 9 as possible, then start working on the specific ones I want and start getting those level 9s I really, really want. There's a few in there that I think are going to be really key this upcoming GACs. but and a couple level threes, level sixes that I'm kind of focused in on. But it's going good so far.
That's good. Also, for the record, Darth Jar Jar, I have Grand Inquisitor, so you can turn your total slackers to a singular, because technically, Teal, you're not riding on my coattails. Yeah. I'm getting the shards for you.
I recruited people to do my slack.
Shout out your contribution.
Shout out to Calvin and shout out to Old Man Logan. You guys are keeping me alive in the guild.
No, that's true. I didn't think about it that way. You've netted more shards to the guild than most people have, I guess you could say.
From a certain point of view.
There you go. Now, my leg day's been going pretty well. This was probably a week or two ago now, but you mentioned it earlier. I kind of went all in on the Zori team, where my secondary resistance, they were not good. Like, they were pretty garbage. And I just decided to give them, like, all the Zetas, and, like, quite recklessly, too. Like, I gave Finley Zeta back, which, gosh, I missed the original version of that. That was so fun. I gave Zori both of hers. And then on top of that, I also gave Rose hers for some stupid reason. So now I have that team functional. That was actually, it did pretty well for me in the last week of 5v5. It got a few holds and or required, like, a lot bigger teams to take down, which with Zori being gear 11, that was a little bit shocking, but that felt pretty good. And then I feel like I did a bunch of other stuff. Like, I prepped a lot of my new characters. So like the Afro droid, Sana, Tuskens, I got them all to gear 11. They're all prepped, ready to go for when they need to get to something. And other than that, I've just been hoarding because I think I now have all the gear and relic requirements or relic levels and everything to take Trench all the way up to be able to use his Datacron. And I actually just rolled one not so long ago. It doesn't have the right level 6, but I rolled the right level 9 in the first try. So I'm going to try to get that 6 to go in the right direction if I can. I've already rerolled it once and didn't get it, but I mean, it's level 6, so it's the really easy stuff to get, the download MK2 and not the pain in the butt MK3s. So that should be pretty easy to obtain.
Yeah, that's another thing I really like about this conquest, because it's in the conquest store, it's constantly updating. I don't have to go in and farm for those level 6s and level 3 rerolls. I've been just buying them with shard shop currency, and it's been really, really nice.
I'm also glad, speaking of like nice things that CG did with this last set, delaying the auto reroll, that needs to happen every time, because it's such a pain in the butt to like be stressed out for those 3 days trying to get your cash to the exact right amount so that you don't burn anything coming in from the previous month. Giving us how many days does it go till now? It's three? I don't even know because I don't have any left. But it's still going to go for a few days. Like, it's more than enough time for you to start farming the next set and burn through a bunch of that cash so you don't end up burning any resources.
Yeah, no, super player friendly. And hopefully they keep it. Hopefully it's not something that is just this one time that they're doing it. So big shout out to them if this is like a new thing going forward.
Yeah, I guess we should have added that to the list, the laundry list that we gave to Meathead.
Yeah. But no, I've been enjoying the Datacrons in this one. There's a lot of different stuff that I want from this one and stuff that I think I'm going to invest in. Like, say, Mara Jade. She's probably going to go R7 for me. And there's just a couple characters that I'm looking at, too. That's a possibility.
Yeah, she's probably the – I'll have to relook at things. I haven't made, like, a direct plan of, like, who I want to give each Datacron to yet. I used to do that. I used to be better about that, but – the only two level 9s that I know that I want are Trench and Mara Jade, just because I can't touch Tuskens. And then on top of that, I mean, that's like half the Datacrons right there. And if I'm getting Trench, then I'm definitely not getting the Dooku one or the new, I think, is there a new one? I don't know. There's like three Separatist ones that aren't Trench, and they're all like booty compared to him.
Mm-hmm. And big shout out to you, Calvin, speaking to Tuskens with your new video.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, that thing helped me out. I was stressing out about my Tuskens because they're literally gear 1, nothing on the level 1, and I'm able to do that feat. So if you guys haven't seen it, go check it out. Saving my buddy Conquest.
yeah, for context, I released a video last night where basically kind of showing that as long as you have the right discs and a few other things, like as long as you have like JML and stuff like that, you can get all the Tusken feats, all the Cal feats, all the Marin feats, even if those characters for you are garbage. Like mine are sitting at gear 7. I don't think Cal wasn't modded or whatever. And I made the video, so I partially made it for you, Tilo. That was kind of fun. But also because I've been a little confused, not frustrated, confused is the right word, because I've been asked now in 3 separate Discord servers if I'm going to be able to get Red Crate. And I'm like, every single Conquest season, we have new characters blocking feats, and it's never been a problem. Like we always find cheeses, we always put them, we always hide them behind a Galactic Legend, we always have JML get the kill for them, we always have like a data disc set where like gear 11s can like punch up. So I was just a little confused as to why like a lot of people they see Marin and Cal's name and instantly think, oh, well, I don't have them Relic 5, so I can't get Red Crate anymore. And so I mean that video is doing very well. So that's kind of cool because that means a lot of people are seeing the light, so to speak.
Yeah, no, 100%. Speak about it for a little bit. I gotta take this real quick.
Ah, you're good. But yeah, so if anyone wants to see that, that is Calvin Awesome on YouTube. And basically, I guess we can go over it real quick. What I'm doing is we're taking in JML lead and calling Cal or Seer, doesn't matter, to assist against the Tuskens. And as long as you have voluntary Vanguard, JML doesn't need a full Jedi team to taunt, and he can call in any light side ally to assist dealing damage off of his max protection. So your Cal and your Seer, they can be in total garbage. Like, they can be gear 1. And since the Tuskens don't have any AoEs in the Treasure Node 4, you can just keep wailing away on them with those two characters until they die, which isn't all that hard. Typically, if they're in the red, one assist from JML will kill them, or rather, assist from Cal with JML lead. And then, like, Marin, like, there's a lot of really... Mine's not good, but if you have a... If you have even one Amplify Agony, like I have one green Amplify Agony, I take them in and my R5 Daka, my Gear 12 Night Sisters, and I guess my Gear 7 Marin or something like that, they're destroying it for like 3 or 4 battles a day. And if you have like any more than one Amplify Agony, I imagine the team just absolutely melts. I do have a little bit of vitality on that one, so that actually helps a lot. Yeah, but like you don't need like fully Relic Night Sisters to do it either. It's totally doable without. And then what was the Cal, Marin, and Tuskens are pretty much the same way, where you need Volatile Accelerator, and you probably do need Amplify Agony for that one too, because as long as you eventually take a turn and get a hit on them, which the way that momentum is built when the enemy Tuskens are getting turn meter and then stunning themselves, eventually you do, and then the enemy team also just falls apart. So it's meant to be an encouragement. That's to people, like, even if you have these characters really low, if you have the tools, like if you have JML, if you have an R5 Daka, if you have the right disc for the Tuskens, and really, it probably does help that I have both and Tusken Raider, like R4, R5, because of their Galactic Legends. If you have all that, like, this should be very easily doable, and not just doable, but doable on the bonus nodes, so... That is pretty darn helpful. Yeah, overall, I found this Conquest to be... It feels, in nature, a little bit more tedious, but at the same time, because of us getting a lot of the older disc setbacks and being able to build a bunch of different combos, it feels easier. And not because the feats of the battles themselves are easier, but because you can build, like, 3 or 4 different really good sets. I'm not sure what... We can ask Tilo when he gets back, but... Like the Zealous Ambition Vitality one, like that one still works super well. Amplify Agony with Volatile Accelerator is also a really good option. We still have all of the, I forget their names, the Reckless Offense or whatever they're called, or Reckless Swiftness, where you start to really compound and build turn meter and offense as soon as you start getting kills and stuff like that. So there's still a lot of options out there, and I think that helps immensely. As long as you're getting the right ones to be able to get the right build, that works pretty well. All right, the momentum feat is also really, that one's hilarious because you can build up, that's a different feat though. You can get like stupid amounts of momentum in like one battle, and you don't even have to win. So That one's one of probably the easier cheeses in this one, but it just comes down to a question of understanding the mechanic and then really, really going for it. Ruthless, not reckless. Thank you, Dufaint. Yeah, that's all there really is for the new Conquest right now. I guess we can talk a little bit about how I'm doing in GAC, because that would be what we would do if Teela were still here right now. I actually ended really well this last season. I had been dipping down between Kyber 1 and Kyber 2 ever so slightly, but I managed to pull out really strong and the last week and ended completely in Kyber 1, which is really nice. Because number one, my self-esteem doesn't get hit, take another hit, so that's pretty cool. But in addition to that, I get those bonus crystals all throughout the off week. However, that being said, like, I'm so close to the line, I'm probably going to be one of those people, and we'll see, because I landed a little bit deep into Kyber 1, but I'm probably going to be, if I lose my first match coming into 3v3, I'm probably instantly in Kyber 2, and maybe even if I win, so... That's slightly discouraging, but I mean, it is. We know the reason why. We know that the squish isn't quite working properly, so that's just kind of something that's going to happen right now. But I felt pretty good about my strategies. I think we were getting quite a bit better with trying to figure out things. I guess, and this is kind of pointless, maybe we'll talk about this coming into 5v5 a little bit more, but gosh, CLS versus Jabba. I could probably look that up right now, but CLS versus Jabba with the Chupiocron, oh my gosh. I think I faced 8 Jabbas in those 9 matches, and it lost once. Like, just win after win after win after win. And I think there is a break point where it loses, specifically, like, they have a really good boosh with a Kron that has a ton of armor. I think it probably falls apart, but I mean, you could probably even counter that with, like, an Armor Pen Kron. Because my armor pen for my CLS Kron is not good, or my Chupiocron. It's like, I'm looking at it right now, it's like 34? 38. It has 38% armor penetration. So I feel like that's probably workable to the point where you could get it. I should probably reroll. Yeah, that resistance penetration. Ooh, that looks tempting to reroll. Oh, that's the MK3s, though. I don't know if I want to do that. Yes, Plague and Purge are two different things, although they do look similar, and I've used them interchangeably when I shouldn't, like for like coming with Inquisitors and be like, I'm going to plague all of you, and then it's not quite how that functions. But yeah, JC is going well, and then for 3v3, gosh, I don't know if I even know what I'm doing right now. That's something I need to do this weekend, where I need to go through and just kind of figure out all my teams with the new comps, and I have no idea where I'm going to put Trench right now, especially because, like, his 5v5 team is pretty obvious, but for threes, I just don't know.
My bad.
Welcome back, Teela.
My dog knocked down his food bin and was just eating everything. I'm like, you fatso.
Well,
we're good now.
We covered a lot of stuff, Teela. We're officially talking about 3v3, so, like, it's coming here pretty quick, and actually, we probably... Oh no, we won't have another show before it starts. We'll have our first round on Wednesday, and we're doing this bi-weekly anyways. Yeah. But are there any? We've had quite a few shifts in the meta, and just shifts in our roster in general, with either Datacrons or new characters being farmed or just being available. What are some changes, if any, that you're going to be making to your 3v3 lineup, offense or defense? Doesn't really matter.
You know what? I haven't really put a lot of thought into it yet. I know there's going to be some changes. I wonder where Shorty's going to go. Is it going to be on her own team? Or are we going to try to do something dumb with her and Ray? I don't think it's as strong as it is in 5v5. So I'm not 100% sure what we're going to do with that. Other counters and stuff like that, I'm not 100% sure. I'll probably end up doing that around maybe Thursday or Friday, kind of build those out.
Yeah, I'm looking at my list right here, and gosh, this thing's super outdated. I'm going to have to redo a lot of this. But I think for me, probably the most challenging at figuring out what I want to do with it is going to be Trench, because the way they designed this kit, and we've made this comment has been made about 3v3 probably ever since it came out. But the team was very clearly designed for 5v5, and not even – it wasn't – how do I word this? It wasn't designed for 5v5. This is going to sound stupid, but it was designed to have Newt, to have Watt, to have Jango, and to have Dooku. Like, it wants all four of those characters to function properly, especially with how the taunting mechanic works. Like, you need all but, I guess you don't need Newt to have that happen, but yeah, what are we doing with Trench for threes?
I think that's going to be the team right there. It's going to be Trench, Jango, and probably Watt. But I think it's one of those teams that suffers, say, like a Tusken. I don't know if it's going to have the same viability it has in 5v5 that in 3v3. And it sucks. I hate teams like that.
Tuskens, I think are better in threes, man.
No. They're good in threes, where I think they're better in threes than they are in 5v5.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to do, so you know how the Malgus comp that everyone uses is like Talon and Marauder? Mm-hmm. And it kind of sucks, but it's a pretty good deal. That's probably what I'm going to do with Trench. I'll give him Jango and Dooku. Like, not a good team, but it's a pretty good deal. Like, I can survive. My Newt doesn't really need Jango, I feel like, as much as a lot of other people's do. Like, I've ran Newt Magna in B1 before, and that actually does kind of well.
I like that team, though. That Newt, Jango, and B1, that thing just is so clutch for me on offense, taking out Qui-Gon squads, and tons of other stuff, too. Just the survivability of having both Newt and Jango being able to have that second life, pack a solid punch, stall them with extortion, and then B1 just having their health and protection up. It's just a nasty, nasty team.
Yeah, maybe I don't do that. But so, I mean, Dooku's a completely free agent. And then, I don't know. Watt is hard to give up. And say, I mean, Newt is the same problem that Jango has. So we'll see. But he can have Dooku. Like, that's super cool. Like, I don't have any problems with that.
If it's a gangbuster, then yeah, Jango can definitely go in. But just Watt is just so much more valuable, I think, in threes. Because there's a couple comps that you definitely need him with a C, or even with an SLKR, depending on the situation. But yeah, there's tons of stuff. For me, another one I'm just thinking off my head right now is Treya. I'm not 100% sure what I'm going to do with Treya.
I know what I'm doing with Treya.
I probably will keep her on defense just because I like her on defense, unless I go against something that requires her on offense. But I'm really wondering if I go, and I've been setting this, the Treya, Sion, and Nihilus, like everybody else. But I wonder if instead of Sion, I put Savage. If it might be a way better defensive comp than putting Sion in there.
That's what I did last 3v3. It was Mir or GL all 9 matches.
Well, yeah, see, that's so much
my
better.
My Treya is not good. She's R3, or she was R3 all last season, so... Yeah, it was Treya, Savage, and Talon.
Oh, you didn't even put Nihilus in there.
No. So, I mean, and this is what I did all season, is I threw those three Jokers on defense, and then Nihilus's job was to annihilate whatever character that I just couldn't get down. Often an enemy Malgus. Like, I'd, like, send in Newt, Jango, B1 to kill the sides or something, and then I would send in Thrawn-led Nihilus or something and kill him.
And I wonder if I do that and keep Talon in that position, I wonder how Nihilus will perform with, say, Malgus to kind of like throw off my opponent super hard. I think that's interesting as well, too. I don't know if it'll work that good. I'm just spitballing off my head, but that's maybe a possibility.
That might be fun, but yeah. Oh, so this just came to me. Well, it actually came to me a week ago and then I forgot, apparently. The comp that I want to use with Trench more often than not is actually probably going to be Dooku and GBA.
Okay. I can see that.
GBA can pretty much do everything that Newt can do. The only reason why I wouldn't want to do it is if I really, really need C to beat JMK, because then I'm going to need him. But other than that, like, that's probably GBA is probably in less demand than, say, Watt or maybe even Jango, like, as a whole.
Yeah, no, that's true. And you know what? Trench might be a really
good... I got a R5.
Oh, on GBA?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's nice, too. Mine's only at R3. He's one of those characters I've been looking at maybe for an R5 situation. Yeah, I don't know. If I were going to put Trench on defense, I think I would place him as Bad Batch bait, because I think a lot of people are going to go Bad Batch against Trench and say you have
something. I don't think it's going to work.
In threes?
They're immune to days.
Oh, with the Datacron, huh?
Yeah, I don't think Bad Batch beat him.
No. That counter is done for the next 4 months.
Yeah, I don't have all the abilities pulled up right now, but like the Datacron for Trench, like we can say what we want about Trench, how he'll be post the Datacron, but gosh, does this prop him up? Like, I mean, it gives him everything he needs, because you're gonna get everyone's gonna have repost too. We have the stacking offense with all those buffs we get, and then they're immune to days, and I don't even remember what the rest of level six does. I don't have it right now. But his is gonna be. It'll get beat by something. We'll probably find some relatively cheap counter to it. But it's gonna do some nasty things.
Because I was holding in my back pocket, just in case I needed it, Wampa just jacks up Trench in 5v5. I did that. When they don't have Watt, I killed that team with Wampa super easy. So I don't know.
Oh, against Trench?
Uh-huh. And it worked. And it had Dooku too. I should have checked like the stat levels and his potency and stuff like that too. But it worked for me. I had the 20% TM though. I don't know if that affected anything.
It probably won't work. That won't work in that won't work with the Datacron, because with repost they'll hit under protection.
And then days too. That's big.
Yeah. Also, Farrell, to answer your question, we don't have Reva, and I don't. Taylor, you're farther ahead than I am. When are you getting her?
Cubs said in May.
I joined late, so I'm not getting her quite as early as you all are.
I know I'm going to have her before Grand Inquisitor comes back. So I'm at 267 shards right now.
Oh, so you're. Oh, 67. So you're. Oh, you're super close. Yeah, you're pretty much guaranteed in two, right?
I believe so. So we'll see.
I'm probably still one behind you.
Yeah, that's one's nothing though. One's not bad.
No, it's really not. Like it's nah. Especially with them being two weeks apart. That's not bad at all.
No, you guys have been killing it on Reef.
No, well, there was a little bit of hiccup when it got buffed or whatever. Most people pivoted, but not all people did. And people were like, oh, this should be fine, and then it wasn't. But this last one, I think we're at two losses right now.
I know. I saw that.
I think we have like 45 people eligible to hit it, so it's going very well.
Yeah, no, it's going super, super good.
Yeah. So I think – that's probably what I'll do with Trench. I'll throw in GBA and what's-his-face in there. And then I really like my Trey and Savage team. But I think that's probably going to be the only main differences we'll see. Oh, one thing I am going to do. With the Lord Vadercron coming back, I'm going to put Maul back in, because that effectively stops bounty hunters, because you can't you can't get around Maul and that at the same time. Like you need four characters to be able to handle the Lord Vader Datacron and Maul, and you only can take three. So he's definitely going back in there.
And you know what? Jabba's going to have a really, really good resurgence on defense too this season. So I'm really interested. We'll see what he's going to be able to do, especially with Aphra not being a viable or not. She might still, who knows how it is in 3v3s, 5v5, she's still able to get it through, but it's ugly.
It's probably a hard no.
Yeah, who knows?
And then I don't think that works.
And JMK not being able to get the insta kill on Kersantan and permanently kill him, that's going to be really interesting too, especially for those that really invested into their Jabba teams.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. I'd like to see. I haven't taken a good look, but there's probably I bet the new Kron. The offense stacking Kron, I bet that lets JMK beat Kersantan, because that, I mean, you're gonna stack offense super quick. And I haven't looked. Is there a decent Ufu for a cat? Is that a thing?
I like the one where it's basically Rey's ability where she gets to that certain threshold and then she gets the immunity. I think that
All
might
that
come in
damage immunity.
clutch. That might come in clutch. And I'm trying to think if there's any other one too, but I know for sure I was looking at that one. But I think there's another
I
one
looked at
too.
Nia's glance and I wasn't really impressed by any of them, but the offense is going to be a pain. Because you're going to, after about 2.5 minutes, you're just going to start to shred them.
Yeah, it's going to be good. But I'm excited for this season because I think a lot of the thing that was jacking me up the last couple seasons was Afra. Not being able to place Jabba in there and to be one of my cornerstones and stonewalls of defense kind of just jacked everything up. Having them be able to do off meta basically on one of my GLs hurt bad.
I would like a 1 out of 3 hold rate for that. Like, I think my Java got Aphra and almost they tried it every time and like it held 3 times. So that was kind of fun.
Mine was getting tore up, and I like invested into mine too. Like they have good mods, like most of them are R7. I'm like, okay, not
Nah, man,
nice.
my Java sucks. It's like full on it's like full R5s on everyone
That
except
makes me
Java.
feel that makes me feel even worse.
Yeah, I'm sure that was super encouraging. But okay, all right. So I think we kind of covered everything going on with 3v3 now. We have a lot of, we're gonna call them Jayhawk questions because we have a podcast question place to put in the Discord server, and it is currently being like super dominated by our good friend Jayhawk. We're just fine, like that's what it's there for. No, so no shade on him, just some playful teasing, I guess, which hopefully that doesn't get clipped. All right. I don't think. Oh yeah, we haven't answered this one, I don't think. If the battle timer in GAC was increased to 10 or 15 minutes, what teams units do you think would benefit the most, and which teams do you think would be hurt the most?
Anything going against Jabba. Jabba is one of those teams where either I'm using it and I'm like, I could have used one more minute, or going up against it, I'm like, I could have used one more minute and I would have won.
Yeah, Jabba has he. I mean, he's the most recent real timeout team. I've seen a lot of people, and I don't know if this is just like they don't understand, still don't understand Ben Solo's kit, but a lot of people still timeout on Rey, and I don't know how much longer that battle can go before Rey just gets a stupid amount of offense and everyone's dead though. But
You know another good one?
Shorty,
Shorty.
Shorty might be another
Yes.
one.
Yes. I was about to say the same thing. Wampa for Shorty.
Oh yeah, Wampa, because I mean he'll part of me thinks he would still lose at like 10 minutes, like maybe 15. Like give him 15.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, he stacks, and I've been there a couple times where I get her into like a sliver and it goes the timer. And I'm like, if I had 30 seconds, even give me 10 seconds, I think I would have had her.
Yeah, probably before like her data card. Oh, and
Yeah.
that's gone too, isn't it?
No, her data cron's here.
Ah, crap. All
Yeah.
right. Well, that is what it is. When Relic 10 or so, we probably talked about this. When Relic 10 or some equivalent eventually comes, what teams or units do you believe will benefit the most, and which ones will be hurt the most by it? So, who's Relic 10 going to be targeted as?
GLs obviously because it's built into their kit, but it's just going to depend on what it's built for. Is it built for attackers, like most people are speculating? Is it built for healers or supports? Like, it's just gonna depend.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's tricky. And I think they even ran into this problem with R9. I don't know if you remember when R9 was first coming out, it really felt like they were struggling. And like I remember like someone asking Ranger about it back when he was in the program, and he didn't tell anyone what it was, but he was you got the feeling that it was just a huge mess. Like I think they were trying to do something much more complicated with like maybe defense or crit avoidance or like something a little bit more impactful than just simply protection. And I think they eventually just decided against it. So I don't know what they're gonna do, because flat protection for tanks, that's good. Attackers, I don't like, do they just give them flat offense? Do they give them defense penetration? And or like in supports is even harder because it's like what they need, it's speed. Like that's like, is R10 going to be speed? Like it could be. I don't want it to be. That would suck. But like that's what a support character needs. They need to take more turns.
Yeah, and you got to be careful too if it's attackers, like especially with Datacrons too. And now that a lot of stuff are percentage based, you could have some nutty combinations with like Datacrons and say an R10.
Yeah, so it's hard to say. I think they'd probably lean towards attackers first just because it's simple, like, you know, have everyone get more defense pen and then give like twice as much to attackers. That's probably a pretty similar, probably a pretty simple solution. In a previous podcast, you mentioned that you wanted an incentive to continue to grow your roster, even a higher GP. Your example was to, oh yeah, if it's a platoons for GAC, wouldn't you say that Datacron's focusing on random lesser built character is that incentive? So it's definitely one of them. I've thought that for quite a while now, actually. So the GAC board, as it currently stands, you want 22 teams. Datacrons really push you to want 30, because not only do you want the 20 best ones, you also want the next 10 that are one Datacron away from being relevant. Like, so it does help it, but it can only do so much. They can only come up with so many Datacrons per season.
Yeah. No, and Datacrons is good on increasing the roster, because look it, nobody needed an R7 Mara Jade. R5 was doing just perfectly fine. But her Datacron comes out, it's like, okay, let me take her to R7. Like, Datacrons are proving that purpose of increasing our roster levels, and they're doing good at it.
Well, I think so. I think Sortie is one of the best examples of that. She's right on the line of like really good character, but in comparison to all the things that are above her, like you don't really need her to be pretty competitive. Like you can be in Kyber 1 and not have Sortie, but when she got her Datacron, it's like, all right, you really want her now. Like you should have her for this time period. And there's a lot of characters that are in that kind of middle term that you want like all 10 of them. You don't just want to have the two and call it good.
Yeah, a perfect example. I got R7 Shorty, R7 Vandor. Like, there's tons of characters that I brought up just because of Datacrons.
Do you think that with the new team's characters having mechanics to ignore speed, that will stop being the end-all, be-all for mods? Or if so, do you think that will make mod farming better or worse?
Mods are, it's always going to be speed oriented only when it comes to the other battles, because it's only one team that does that. It's the new team. But if multiple teams have it, it's going to start lowering our thing, our priority when it comes to speed. But you would have to do tons of teams that do that, and I don't see them doing that. So speed is going to continue to be a big, big factor in this game.
Yeah, I agree. When we've seen this before, actually, and it's not even just in it's not just with like the Marin and the Cal that are like specifically saying, you know, speed is a non-factor, like Marin really can't even have any. But back towards right after the Darth Revan meta, we had like a pretty good amount of time where characters were using kind of what I would call reflective mechanics. They weren't being active or aggressive and having to go first and control the battle. They could kind of take things from behind. Like Grievous was one of those teams where the Grievous team is really not, for the most part, isn't meant to go right out the gate. You're meant to hit Magna Guard, trigger B2. B2 gives turn meter to everyone else, and you start getting this type of train going. We had several teams that did that kind of around that time period. Geos, again, they weren't a team that was made to go first. They were made to have enough survivability to tank in the beginning and then eventually start to come back through it. I'm trying to remember. There was a Gas is actually kind of that way too. Like Gas doesn't need to go first. He has a specific mechanic where he'll sit and then he'll get back up and you have to deal with him all over again where he'll finally get that turn. Padme as well was specifically made. The whole point of her kit was she's not supposed to really take a turn. Like it's not best for Padme to take a turn until the team is already loaded up with debuffs. Like that's what you want. You wanted the enemy team to go first, so that when you got your turns, you could flip them and destroy the enemy. Basically, what I'm saying is we've seen this before, and speed will still prevail. Like, yes, you do want some mods that don't care at all about speed for your Cal team, for your Marin, whatever. But it's not going to stop being this way. Even if every team from here on out were exactly like Marin, speed would probably still rule because of all the teams and all the characters that are in the game that still rely so heavily on it. It's just so dominating.
Yeah, and going first is just so OP. Speed is speed. Speed is always going to be key, especially in a turn-based game.
Yeah, exactly. And especially when we keep having all these teams come out and it's like, you don't get turn meter now. Why? Because I said so. This is a more fun question. What would you say is your favorite faction gimmick? This one's pretty cool actually, because this is becoming more and more of a thing. Like even Trench has like tactical supremacy or whatever. Like First Order has advantage, Resistance has exposes, Night Sisters have revives. I hope we don't steal mine.
You know what I really, really like, and I've always liked it, and we don't get to use it as much? Plague. Plague is always a fun, unique skill to just the Night Sisters. And I always liked that. There was a old game that I used to play, Division. They had something very similar. It was like a Predator set where you put little ticks of damage on them per second, and it's very, very similar to that. I think it's always a really cool like game mechanic.
Yeah, I always liked how it was pretty sophisticated, especially with the like one of the more overpowered parts of it was the you can't cleanse. And like I feel like a lot of people don't know that. Like I made a video not too long ago. What was I talking about? Oh, I was talking about like hidden synergies between characters like Dooku and Talzin or whatever. And someone was like, you can totally cleanse when you have plague, and I'm like, you can't. And like anyways, but a lot of people don't really realize that. At least you can't cleanse from like an ally or whatever. So mine is actually Ferocity.
Oh, that's a good one too. I always forget about that one too. I'm like, exactly what it does. But it does so much for that team.
Oh, and it does. I think it really states how much that CG at some point, and I know especially recently has been really hard because I feel like there's not a lot of testing going on. It feels like balance is super wonky. But that was one of the things that restored some faith for me of CG understanding what balance is. Because the meta right before Darth Revan was Jedi Knight Revan. And Jedi Knight Revan just really appeared that there was no work to balance that team at all. And they just gave it every single ability that existed at that time. They didn't care. Like, you want revives, you have revives. You want cleanses, you have cleanses. You want debuffs, you have debuffs. You want buffs, you have buffs. You want ignore taunt, you have ignore taunt. Like, every mechanic that existed in the game, pretty much, except maybe anti-revives, they had it. And when Darth Revan came to follow it up, instead of, you know, just giving it all the things but better, they came up with this new mechanic that heavily favored Darth Revan, yes, but also left open this huge weakness where if a character can get a turn and you're loaded up with Ferocity, they can just blow you to smithereens. And that's exactly what happened, because two of the main counters to Darth Revan ended up becoming the GG Nuke Squad, as well as a much less popular but still existent, the Shock Jedi Anakin Squad, where you had, two squads that if you could line them up correctly, if everyone was loaded up with Ferocity, either one of those characters would just blow up the entire team. So that's one of the reasons why I like Ferocity the most, is because it felt like that's when CG kind of took a step back from Jedi Revan and was like, all right, this is not going to be sustainable. Like, we have to start putting in weaknesses to these teams so that things can get around them.
Yeah.
Instead of just giving them every single ability in the game and being like, all right, this one's better than the last one. But anyways, all right, moving our way down here. Since last time you guys mentioned how you wanted to cannibalize teams and make decisions, that was more so the you thing, yeah. Tilo, and you wanted ship mods. What are your thoughts on making key stats from your character's mods carry over to ships? Oh, gross. I don't want that.
I don't know.
Well, just because we have so many ships that the character has a different position. Like, you look at Sith Marauder, he ain't a tank. Like, you want crit damage on your triangle, for example, for Marauder, so that when his offense build from the debuffs, that does a lot more damage. You don't want crit damage on the Sith Bomber. Like, and there's a bunch of examples like that where the what is on the ship does not translate to the character.
That would only work with trash characters that you don't need in GAC. That would honestly
That's
only
true. Work. No, it's true, because if you never use the character on ground, then you're essentially modding them for fleet.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I guess we solved that one. Good job. What would you say is the most luxury team in game? Oh, I have my answer. Most luxury team in game, Tilo. Are you looking one up?
No, I'm trying to think. Most luxury?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Because a lot of stuff is just necessary. What is luxury?
Not everything, though.
It might be the new resistance team. Yeah, maybe the Zori team. That might be a luxury squad. I don't think it's like 100% needed in the meta, but at the same time, it's doing really, really good work.
So the one that I've like come back to several times, and I get like, so I've done a lot of the roster building videos on YouTube, and one team that like a lot of people are really into that just screams luxury to me, like it's Jawas. Like a lot of people are really into Jawas, and I get that they have like some really niche uses versus like Mon Mothma or like Geos, but like it for me, it's the definition of a luxury team. Like you don't need it. Like you have something else. You have something else that can beat Mon Mothma or Geos. You don't need thermals to do it.
You know what? Not Zori, because Emo's bringing out a good point. Like she's nasty. Maybe a shorty team, like a full shorty team, not just shorty herself. That might be the best luxury team out there.
Yeah, she would be a really good luxury team because, and I feel like I can kind of say that a lot because I don't have her. And while it would be nice, I've never really felt like I was missing out.
Yeah, because Jawas are just so niche. Like, I bet you there's going to be, if you had them, there would be a few.
But a lot of people are into them, man. It's funny. Yeah.
No, I know. And especially with the raid, we're going to see more Jawas stuff. But I bet you there's GACs where you won't use them at all. Where the shorty team, at least, like, if you have it, you're going to use it.
Yeah, no, yeah, again, especially given the current grounds with the data crown and whatnot. Coming down to the end here. Oh, what would you say is the worst jelly bean flavor?
Oh, gosh. I was never a big fan of jelly beans, to be honest. I used to never get them because back in the day, they had those nasty jelly beans with like boogers and vomit.
Yeah, I had a vomit one time. It was pretty gross.
I was not about that life. So whenever people would offer me jelly beans, I'm like, hard pass, ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean that's my answer too. Like whatever the vomit one, like that can be the grossest flavor. And I don't know if it's a real flavor, but anyways, what would your thoughts be that instead of having a designated fleet zone, they instead mandate that you have one fleet in each zone? Oh, and have and also have regular teams as well.
Oh man, that's gross. Because you could just stall people out right from the get-go. Something goes wrong. I think the way they have it set up is probably the most fair because fleet is just so wild sometimes. You could do everything right, everything the way you usually do it, and something could just go absolutely wrong, and you can lose that match. A lot of RNG when it comes to fleet, so definitely don't like that.
Yeah, I think it would be frustrating more than it would be anything. And I'm kind of a little on board for board changes. I know that like a lot of people hated it, but man, I loved, you remember the old one where it was like fleet on top and then the bottom was just like 8 character zones and everybody was like, oh, there's no strategy here. And I'm like, guys, I can be done in like 3 minutes if I want. Like, cause you don't have to sit here and guess what's in the back wall. It's all right there. You make a play and you execute it and you beat them.
See, what I want is a unified board. I want 3v3 and 5v5 together. Because then, like, Datacrons, or not Data, Omicrons, like the Tuskens, for instance, their viability goes up. The Afra Datacrons, when it comes to the droids, that goes up. Like, you can have a possibility of using them every GAC. Some times you're probably going to want 5e5, but you make that choice. But I want something that's not just cut off from every other GAC. Because then those 3v3 Omicrons look a lot more nice to me.
Yeah, and that one, so that would be a really hard transition. That would be a really hard, because so many people have, especially with the way that they currently have the board set up for a GAC, where it just, like, you know, auto saves everything that you know and love and hold dear to you. So it would be a transition to kind of figure out what's good and what's where. But man, I just think of, like, the video potential to that, for, like, making content for that. I'm like, because we're essentially opening up a whole new world of having to divvy up, like, what is legitimately best in 3v3 and what is legitimately best in 5. I for me, Calvin, I think that would be really cool as a player. Yeah. But I could see why that would be such a large transition that a lot of people would probably hate it.
I love the possibilities, because it just makes everybody's board even more unique. Because it's like, what are you going to do with Rey? Rey's a juggernaut right now in 5v5, but she's the queen of 3v3. Like, you're going to have to make that choice. Like, there's tons of interesting choices that people are going to make case by case, right, from GAC to GAC. There's tons of cool stuff.
Yeah, and I've always thought that was interesting, like the concept of, you know, what teams are really elevated in 3v3 versus 5v5. So I would be more, I guess we completely didn't answer JHack's question, but we want that. Finally, do you think there's a healthy way to make C good on defense without making him overpowered? I'm guessing this question is more so in regards to, like, could CG buff him without just making him unbeatable?
They can put cloners in there, so once he dies, he comes back. They clone his body again.
Just give him spare parts. Same thing.
Yeah, he just essence transfers into another one of his bodies. Honestly, the way they could probably make him a little bit more viable on defense is just stall. Just have a way to stall the fight to get his ultimate. If they can do something like that, and they would have to kind of figure that out with different characters, but it's just stalling the fight, because he needs that time to ramp up, get his ultimate, take another turn to use the ultimate. So there's, like, tons of stuff with him. He just needs time.
I honestly think he needs, and this is where a lifter would come in, but he needs more help from his allies. Like, in there's some pretty cool things you can do in GAC with the, you know, the three different GAC Omicrons we currently have for Sith. But, like, in Territory Wars, I mean, I guess you have Malak, but C really just doesn't feel like he has a team. Like, no. you look at SLKR and you're like, all right, Night Sisters or Hux. Like, those feel like his team. Or with Rey, like JTR and Ben, like, you're gonna put you want those characters with them almost every single time. Or like Jabba, like Jabba really wants to have Boosh. Like, they all feel like they have dedicated members to their teams. And C, like, I mean, the closest thing he has to a team is that.
Yeah.
So I think that's where really what needs to happen more is he needs a dedicated team that's going to prop him up. And I guess it can be one character, but.
Yeah. Ah, man. Yeah, I don't know. C needs definitely some help too, and I don't know where he would get it from. I think my best bet would be Snoke, because it's his puppet. I think he could do some interesting stuff there. Introduce Snoke, force you to go after Snoke before you go to C, and then also, if you don't use the Praetorian Guards for, say, a Supreme Leader Kylo, which it probably doesn't make sense because they're more with Snoke, you could have them on the team as well, and they could do something.
Yeah, he needs something else there to kind of keep him going. Something that synergizes super well. Except, like I said, especially for TW viability, like TW defense viability, he's missing so much to be good defensively. But All right, we braved the questions. So now, Tilo, I guess we need to, this is the part of the podcast where we tell everyone to get lost if you have not seen the finale of The Mandalorian. So, like, if you have not seen the entirety of season 3 of The Mandalorian, go watch it now. Again, you know, my little favorite line to say, drive your hands, hit pause on the podcast so you don't get everything spoiled for you, because we're going to talk about anything and everything. So I guess I'll give you about 10 more seconds. Feral is saying, give C an Omicron that summons his Sith supporters from The Last Jedi.
Ooh, that would be kind of cool too.
Oh, yeah. Just continue the fact that he's his own team. Like, that he doesn't go, well, like, he can just use whoever's there.
Just random, just run and just attack you like they did to Ben.
I mean, CJ's kind of been going that in direction with Fleet. Instead of, like, filling out Fleets, they're like, all right, this ship is actually 3. And it's, like, from a design point of view, it's not that bad of an idea. Like, if it works, cool. But, all right, Taylor, we've given it enough time. Mandalorian finale, what'd you think?
Man, this was really, really cool. I honestly just put the two last episodes as the finale because they just seamlessly go good together. Really emotional when it comes to Paz Vista, and
oh yeah, it sucked.
The finale itself was really cool, action based. Didn't take it as dark as I wanted it to be.
I really thought someone was gonna die, like from the good side, like armor or bow or even like axe. Like, I thought for sure, I'm like, all right, he's dead. He's going down with the ship.
And they could, this could have been their Empire Strikes Back. Like, they could have let Moff Gideon get away with Din Djarin. Like, they could have did something. And I don't know. Like, there was tons of, like, speculation out there from people that were really, really good ideas. And that's kind of, like, the sucky part of looking at people's speculation, because sometimes their speculation is better than the end result that we get. So, I don't know. I think my expectations were a little bit higher than what we got, but not saying that it was bad at all. It was really, really good still.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, I don't know. It was just overall solid. So this is not the last Mandalorian season. Apparently the script for the fourth one is already out there. But it looks like, Teal, you're probably more plugged in than I am. But they're looking, I think, to do a fourth, and then they're going into the movie, and then that's wrapping everything up, right? Or no?
Yeah, so basically this is your end game. Basically, to the Mando universe is going to be Dave Filoni's movie.
Okay, so yeah, but I don't think this is the last season. Like, I think we're going to get one more. And this season felt a little bit the season as all felt a little bit odd to me, because they were trying, and by the end of it, we can see that they're trying to just get to, like, a really nice ending point, like to a safe space, so that they can start to usher in a new overall theme. And yeah, it was just a little bit odd, because I feel like all three seasons have had one singular direction, and this one was just such a large shift from the other two that it was just a little weird. Like, the first season, the mission is obviously, you know, save Grogu. Like, that's the mission. Like, that's season one in its entirety. Season two was get Grogu back to his people. And now season three, not really about Grogu at all. Like, he's still there. But this was, and I'm not saying this is bad, but it was odd that most of the focus for the season was about Bo-Katan bringing back Mandalore.
Yeah, and I think that's what the main thing. But I would have, I don't know. Like, I feel like Din Djarin and Grogu took a step back in this season. This season was more Mandalorian focus, where it was them as a whole in the take back of Mandalore, which is really cool lore perspective wise, but story perspective wise, I feel like it kind of hurt the relationship between Din and Grogu. And the payoffs that we did get in this finale didn't hit as hard as other payoffs we had in, like, other previous seasons.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The payoff, like, it was good, solid. The payoffs just weren't as large. And I think ultimately what it is they're trying to shift focus now for what this is ultimately going to lead up to later within, you know, the next season and the movie and everything else that we're going to get like that. But, I mean, it was – I won't lie. It was a little bit nice to get to the very end of the season and for everything to just be right. Like, Moff Gideon wasn't out there. I mean, he might be, whatever. It wasn't out there scheming or, like, Grogu wasn't captured and Bo-Katan wasn't killed. Like, everything's, like, pretty chill.
But it just I don't know. There's something that doesn't sit right with me. And figuring Dan's put a good comment in there. Like, he feels like there's a Moff Gideon clone out there with force powers. I think so, too. Because you
can't tell me. I hope there's not.
But you can't tell me all this lead up. All this
I know, but I'm tired of the somehow X and so and so has returned. Like, just kill him. Like, I'm tired of seeing him.
I know, but it's like you can't, like, all this, like, secret to you, like, secrets, all of this, like, working towards this one thing was just wrapped up by Din Djarin pressing a button that we didn't even see him press, and they all explode.
Yeah, actually, that was something that I didn't like. And I felt the same way. I got the same vibe that I got from when we saw Ahsoka in season 2. I liked that it happened. I liked that we found out that Moff Gideon's, like, his ultimate goal behind capturing Grogu and wanting to, you know, steal his blood so that he could have did I just get muted?
No, you're good.
Never mind. I liked that the whole idea behind him doing that was because he wanted kind of access to the Force, but it was, like, revealed in such a crappy way. Like, it was just dropped like a comment. Like, I don't, like, again, going back to season 2 of Mandalorian, like, I wanted, like, an actual, I feel like the presentation of Ahsoka coming could have been way better. It was just like, suddenly she's there running around lightsabers. So I was like, you couldn't have had, like, I don't know. I really, really like Captain America grabbing the hammer moments. Like, I want there to be something at stake. I want there to be something, some type of emotion. And then when a bigger reveal, like, you know, Moff Gideon being after the Force DNA or Ahsoka appearing, I want it to be made big and not just to be some passing comment. I guess that was my issue with things.
I wanted Moff Gideon to be like a Loki or a villain that we remember, like a Killmonger, rather than being a villain like the Marvel has that are like one and done that you barely forget. Like, say, I don't know, like the Iron Man 2 villain, Whiplash or something like that, that just comes in, comes out. Like, I wanted him to be memorable, especially because he's been throughout it for, what, 2 seasons now? Because he wasn't in season 2.
What? No, he was in season 2.
Was he? Oh, yes, he was in season 2.
Yeah, he was probably bigger in season 2 than he was in 3. But it almost felt like they brought him back because they were out of villains. Like, I don't know. I feel like the buildup could have been a little bit better there. And I was happy to see him, and his motivation kind of worked. And, yeah, I don't know.
I geeked out so hard, though, when he had the Secret Council meeting.
Oh, in the previous episode, yes. That was good. I mean, we called that. Like, we made the comment on our last show that the way that the Mandalorian is going to end is it's going to show how the First Order is going to be ushered in. And that's exactly what that scene was.
It was just cool to see Hux too, like Hux's father. Like, yep. It is cool that they use the actor's brother to play his father. So they have a similar look. Like, it's just really cool. I enjoyed that a lot. And I hopefully that we see a little bit more of that actor and we see the way he is, because the times that we get information about him, it's not a lot of information, but it's very, I don't know, revealing information. Like, Hux is a child out of wedlock. Like, Hux is not his legitimate child. Like, it's a side piece child. And then also, like, the interaction that he has with Phasma, if you guys have ever read the Phasma book, it's really, really interesting. And you see that how he treats his son and how his son treats him. And I don't know if I want to get into spoilers about that book, but you see his fate. It's really, really interesting.
Well, and I like how they're being kind of smart about it too, where they're similar to how like the Clone Wars had a tendency to really accent the good things or like build on the good things that people liked about the prequel trilogy. It looks like they did that well with the end of the Mandalorian series here too, because like the Praetorian Guard were one of like the better things from the sequel trilogy. Like that fight scene with Rey and Kylo, you know, you take away that one misstep of choreography that the YouTubers found, but like I enjoyed that scene. That's probably my favorite moment of the entire sequel trilogy. Is I'm just sitting there in the movie theater waiting. I'm like, all right, I'm here to see Empire Strikes Back number two. Blah, blah, blah. This is so boring. Oh no, of course Vader's not gonna kill Palpatine. He can't do that until episode six, and then or episode nine, and then all of a sudden Kylo strikes Snoke down the middle. I'm like, oh, this just got interesting. So I TLDR, I like seeing the Praetorian Guard.
Hey, you know what? Look, speaking of choreography, Din Djarin must have been taking some yoga or something, because he was just flexible in this last finale. He was doing some John Wick stuff. Like, it was crazy.
Oh, and the worth noting, too, they've gotten a lot better. Whoever was the director, you know, producer, I don't know how things work. Whoever is like in charge of fight scenes, significantly better. Like, I remember the very end of Mando season two, of like seeing Cara Dune and Fennec like kind of storm down the halls with like a handgun in their hand. I'm like, this is like, I like what's going on here. But like, this is kind of crummy. Like, this isn't, from a quality standpoint, this isn't super cool. The fight, I mean, the final battle in season three was really good. Like, I was never thinking this is kind of crummy. I was like, what's happening now?
No, that was really good. Like, I love Din Djarin using two guns. I really hope he uses two guns moving forward. It just gave me John Wick vibes this whole last episode. It was awesome. And then the Praetorian Guards, that was really, really cool. Both scenes that they were in.
Yes. Yeah, I did like it that, like, it was a little bit weird because, like, so Paz goes to take on everyone alone, and it really kind of looks like, oh, he'll be fine. Like, he'll be fine. Like, just kill everyone. And then they came out and were like, all right, we know how this ends.
Yeah, it's just the Praetorian Guards. You think about it. Look what they were able to do against Rey and Ben. And they put up a fight against Force users.
Oh, yeah, no, they did. I mean, they got taken apart because, you know, it's Rey and Ben, but.
Yeah, but they still, they put the hurting on both of them. So, having somebody that doesn't have the accessibility of using their jetpack, like Paz did, like his jetpack was all smoking and had that little knife compared to theirs, he was going to get rocked. And the only thing that saved Din is having Grogu. Grogu saved his life countless times in that fight.
Well, and that was kind of cool too. And I've had mixed feelings about this throughout, you know, the majority of really, I guess, season three and season two, but they really managed to make the animatronic puppet or whatever Grogu like actually kind of look like a decent fighter in that scene, along with Mando and them just kind of consistently saving each other's butts left and right. And the only thing that I would have liked to have seen is I wanted to see a little bit more progression with Grogu. And this probably is not a story issue from the writers. This is probably more so of a practicality, because like, how do you age him? Or like, can they actually do that quickly? Like, he's 50 years old. Is he supposed to actually look, can he even look different from season to season? Like, I don't know. I feel like they were probably limited in that way, so I shouldn't blame them. But I was like, oh man, I was really hoping when Grogu became like an official Mandalorian or whatever, that he was gonna, cool, he was adopted, that's cool. But I was really wanting, I thought we were finally going to hear him speak. I'm like, three seasons, come on, guy, like, give me something.
I thought he was going to say, this is the way or something, you know?
Well, I thought he was going to say, the way this is, and everyone would freak out. Like, that was kind of what I was hoping for.
But that's like a Yoda thing, because we look at Yaddle speaks perfectly fine. Yoda, this, There's something wrong with Yoda.
So we don't know. We don't know quite yet. We think it's because I think the theory that I followed was because Yaddle grew up on Coruscant. Like she was found as a baby, whereas Yoda was raised on his home planet. So we don't. I guess we don't really know what the case with Grogu is.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how that turns out. But yeah, I was right there with you. I was hoping he said something, or said something, or got his armor. I did like that he got his IG-11 mech suit for a little bit. That was kind of cool. The yes, no was funny, but that's gone too. So what is he going to do now?
Yeah, I don't know. This is kind of messy because the armor is kind of like, you know, bringing together the Mandalorians is more important than my little cult over here, which is kind of cool. But at the same time, like I think we all kind of thought that when Grogu became a Mandalorian, he's going to have to wear a helmet, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's going to eventually come. It's just, they're just slow playing this really, really long.
It's an enjoyable ride, so.
Yeah, I can't complain. Another thing that I didn't like, and it's funny, there's so much stuff that I said I didn't like, but overall, I really, really like this season. I like this episode. But there's just certain stuff that I kind of, I don't know, would have wanted a little bit better. No end credit scene like we did last season with the whole
Boba Fett. Yeah, I wanted that a little bit too, but I was a little skeptical because we got a lot of news and I didn't think they'd be able to tie it in very well. Maybe they would have, because like Thrawn got talked about in the previous episode, and I was kind of wanting just a little bit more of a build up into the Ahsoka, but I mean they've already kind of covered that with trailers.
Yeah, but they could have did like Pelion saying, "Hey, they just took out Moff Gideon. The Mandalorians just took him out. And then, what are we gonna do?" And then Thrawn turns around, and he says, "Patience," or something, you know?
Or like that would have actually been really cool. Yeah,
I was gonna say patience, and then you see Mandalorian art in the background. Like, that would have just made everybody flip.
Yeah, no, that would have been pretty cool. And I think they've already used this card, so that kind of sucks. But it was still one of the most bone-chilling things that I've seen, like, the last couple of years of Star Wars, is seeing Ahsoka say, "Heir to the Empire." Like, that's a big deal.
Yes. So, but they could have did something like that. Like, it felt like an opportunity missed. Because Most most people have seen Thrawn and the way he's going to look already from the leaked images.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
All right, Tilo, I hate to do this, but there's like a really strong thunderstorm here right now, so I should probably shut down everything. But anything to say before we deuce out?
Celebration was lit. It was so good. Those leaked trailers are super good. I still have them on my phone, so if anybody wants them, hit me up.
Well, until the next time, everyone stay mad awesome.
Bye, Felicia.